We are at the last Friday of the year. We're going to make sure that we look back at this year so that you have an opportunity to know whether those things that you thought happened actually did happen. So with us today, we have Zaz Hollander, Terry Snyder, and Mark Kelsing. And you've grown to listen to their voices over the last month or so. Let's start by saying today some news came out regarding the Supreme Court. Someone want to take a quick description of what that was? Terry.
Well, the Supreme Court has been punted the ball on redistricting, that according to the census, it was time for the 2010 census. It was time for the people of Alaska to redesign their districts to make it more equitable for people to vote. It was a long process, arduous process, very politically charged. Up until the very last minute to make the decision on last year's election, and the lower court said, just use the plan that you came up with, even though there are plenty of people that don't think it's fair for this election, and we'll relook at it after the election. And that's basically what they've done. The Supreme Court has now looked at it and said, oops, you got some problems there. There does have to be some districts redrawn. It just came out this afternoon. It's a 48-page decision. I just glanced at it, but it won't take effect until the 2014 elections. But, you know, again, these things have a way of having a reaction down the road. You've got incumbents that are in areas that may not be in areas. It does make a difference. It really does. But it's kind of a sleeper that a lot of people aren't going to pay too much attention to, except for the political junkies.
Well, Terry, that's a great description, and I think the most important point from this perspective of this particular show is to say that that was an event that we covered earlier in the year, and one that it seemed to have gone away, but it did come back. Mark, did you have any comments about it?
Well, it seems unlikely to me that the MATSU will be affected. I know in the most recent revision of the first draft of the redistricting map, there were only a couple of districts that were told to, you know, be fixed, and it was about Native allocation. There was some concern that that the Native voice would be diminished because of the way the lines were drawn. I do not know the details of what went down today, but it seems equally likely to me that it probably revolves around that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the suit was brought forward by the people of Esther, I believe, and up in the Fairbanks area. And actually, at one point, MATSU talked about getting in the mall, in the fray, but they pulled back, and they did redo their assembly districts based on the census. But again, I tend to agree with Mark. I doubt that we're going to see too much down here, but it's hard to say. It's a bouncing ball, and it's still in process. So,
okay. Well, that was today. Let's go look back into, say, January. You know, thinking about January, that was an awful long time ago. I know Terry has had a little advantage because what she's done in the recent couple of weeks is look back over the borough and the school district. So I maybe turn to her and say, think about all that's happened since last January. Close your eyes, sit back, go into a meditative, deep moment. And what pops into your mind? What happened this year?
Well, if you're starting with me, you're making me relive this year way too much. I can say that right now since I just finished. I'm about ready to put up a blog post about it. But it was an active year in the borough. They took on a lot of big things. They took the budget on first and kind of took the jackhammer approach to that, which, you know, is always going to have an effect. They had a huge struggle year-long with towers and unregulated towers at the end of last year, which kept, you know, left sort of a free-for-all. You know, they pretty much went after all regulations. The subdivision code was a huge one, made huge changes to the subdivision code. So there's just a long laundry list of it that pretty much affected everybody. And I think we'll see some of the fallout from that. There was some high notes. Hatcher Pass government peak plan was approved, much to some people's surprise at the end. In fact, they had their ribbon cutting this morning. Zaz can probably talk about that a little bit more. That's a big high point for the area. So there were a couple little high points, but a lot of scratching your head stuff.
So maybe that's the point to be made about the year. There was a lot of scratching your head and trying to figure out, what did this all mean? Zaz, did you have a comment?
Well, and I do have a little more information about the Nordic ski area. But, yeah, I think that the issues of this year are going to slop over into next year. The ferry, big question mark, big boondoggle for now. Maybe it's going to, the Marianas, maybe not. So there's the ferry hangover effect. And meanwhile, we're probably paying, $60,000, $80,000 a month? Although, Terry, didn't you say that you haven't heard anything about that at Assembly for a few months now?
I'm anxious to see if that's on the next Assembly.
Yeah.
January 15th.
The power scenario, where we're going to get our power from, I mean, that's a question that has to be answered next year because of the MEA contract with Shugach expiring in 2014. Are we going to be burning diesel or some kind of fuel at a new power plant in Eklutna? And what kind of rates will we be paying here? In Palmer, the budget structure that they ended up with just this month means that their employees are now for the first time paying an 80-20 split on their health insurance. Employees have for years complained about low level of pay in Palmer compared to other communities. And will that mean next year that there's a loss? That'll be a really interesting one to watch. So a lot of head scratching.
That's true.
At the end of this year.
That's very, very true. Mark, you've had an opportunity perhaps to look over the year. What do you see?
Well, I think the bulk of the head scratching comes from these issues that, just seem to keep on giving year after year. And certainly as we head into the new year, it seems the big question that you might be able to wrap it all up in is, what does it mean for the borough to be open for business? We've heard this theme repeated at the assembly table regularly, and I think it sounds good. I think most people would agree, yes, it's good to be open for business, but what does it mean to residents and to our everyday lives to be open for business?
Right, and what's the cost of dialing all that regulation back? I hear that there's a lot of work being done on what exactly titled the change of the subdivision code has meant and dollars and cents and other issues that departments have had. And in the mix of all this, we've had a huge flood. And by all standards, a really big flood. And both corners, and we've got two braided, on both ends of the borough, braided rivers that are causing all kinds of havoc. So, I think everybody's right. It's just is the gift that keeps on giving. And they've spent their reserves down. That's another thing that you might see some reaction to. They've got a tax cap now. They don't have a revenue cap. They changed that. And they've spent their reserves from some $14 million down to less than four. So it'll be an interesting budget year. Interesting budget year.
And as you bring up the flood, an article in the New York Times today described the situation where by many people who in a much larger flood zone essentially are faced with the difficulty of rebuilding their homes. And they're not finding it easy to do, and they're in many cases selling at quite a loss. We have here in our own area what I think is the iconic example of that in the house that won't fall into the river. I mean, that description of the situation there that's been carried in considerable detail leaves you just wondering how easy it is to fall between the cracks and yet not fall far enough so that compensation can be available from any of the variety of different programs and insurances that there are. Any comment about that?
Well, I think that there's a real difference between both the monies available, say, on the East Coast and in Alaska because of the relative severity of the events involved, but also the real difference in planning and land use overlays and flood zone mapping. I think we're behind the eight ball on that here, certainly. And it's been a problem for a long time. And I think these floods are starting to come much closer together. These 100-year floods are coming every few years, it seems, sometimes, in the last 10 years anyhow. And so that's a real difference, I think, that we that the borough is there has been talk in past years about getting up to speed on under past administrations, but I don't know that this is the administration to do that.
Well, and given the vast amount of public cash being thrown at this, it definitely behooves us to rethink where we build, why we build, and who should be responsible for events like this.
Okay. I think that's been the biggest frustration, especially with the people of the Butte that have visited this topic several times, is a lot of finger-pointing, not us, not us, and they are certainly the ones left out. But, you know, let's not forget the whole city of Talkeetna pretty much when the river encroached just about into them and could have completely wiped that out in the spring, and we haven't thawed yet. We have a huge ice buildup. We have ice dams places we probably don't know. So that could play out again, and do they get to, you know, have another state disaster, another federal disaster if that happens? And do we have the people to rebuild the infrastructure that's going to be needed with that? So a lot of big questions. We also have big school bonds going on, and we have road bonds going on. We have a lot of construction projects on the board.
Now, you just mentioned a little bit earlier the question of power. I had an opportunity to speak with a member of one of the local power utilities boards, not our local Valley board, and there was a reminder at that time about Fire Ireland as an example of a project that was originally designed, and I believe I'm correct in this, producing somewhere about 100 megawatts. It was dialed back and dialed back and dialed back until now it's down there at roughly a tenth or so of that capacity. And there is discussion, and it's appropriate to bring this up because we're ever closer to that time when it's suggested that there will not be enough natural gas to fuel power plants. And so as we move into 2013 and beyond, particularly 2014, the question is, are we focused and have been focused on natural gas but have been mesmerized by it to the point where we've actually not been able to act and have not been able to look at alternative energy as well. Zaz, have you looked into this at all?
I haven't looked into that specifically, but certainly, I mean, there is money available on the state level through the Renewable Energy Fund for in examining and investing in renewables. That money, I can't remember, it was just reapproved, I think, for 10 years. It pales in comparison to the amount of money the state spends on oil and gas. Now, obviously, the oil and gas infrastructure in our state, the oil infrastructure, is needs to be cared for and well fed. But it does seem that, you know, as we're kind of shifting from a reliance on oil and gas and starting to look into renewables, that the focus is kind of a little bit lagging behind where it might want to be. You know, up here, it's very windy in the Mat-Su. It's not always a reliable wind, but there's very little talk on the borough level of investing in renewable energy.
Right. The talk on the elephant in the room, of course, is coal for the Mat-Su borough, and they're very pro-coal. And we have coal fields popping up all over, and there's a big push for that. So that certainly will come front and center. You know, if there's not gas, well, at least we've got this. And that has a big effect on a lot of people. And there's this sit in a dam. There's a lot of big projects out there. And these, I guess we should probably, you know, add that both from the governor's perspective and the local legislatures, they're big project people. They're not, they don't seem to have much of an appetite for smaller build on this projects. It's big, big projects. And that's why, you know, I think you'll see more concentration on those than anything.
And Terry, you've mentioned that word, the legislature. We'd be remiss if we did not turn to the legislature because there was obviously a large and a very long campaign that was designed, many would say, to change the relationship of the majority and minority groups in the legislature. And that appears to happen. So this coming session will be very different. Mark, you want to speak to that?
I would add, yeah, and this is sort of the good side for the MATSU to this whole redistricting thing. It won't change now. It won't change immediately. So we have essentially 2 years of having our guy, Charlie Huggins, as Senate president. And what that means for the borough is very likely, well, certainly you've heard it at the assembly table, it's our turn. I think there's an expectation that we will get more goodies than usual in the capital budget, for example. So that, I think many people would say that's a plus for us. What we do with it is always the big question, and ultimately, you know, how it affects us will be about how we use those goodies.
Well, I think they're counting on as much of the goodies as they are on the lack of regulation. I think they have their people in place that have no appetite for really any government intervention. And that's really, in some ways, more of a goal than it is these big projects. I mean, they're in pretty good position right now with the rail, some other ones. They've got as much work as they can really do, not to say they wouldn't take more. But I think they're really counting on those members to on education. It's Lynn Gaddis is now the chair of education in the House side. She's been very pro voucher, as is Mr. Dunleavy, who's now sitting on Senate Finance. So I think you'll see some pretty hard pushes for their ideology, just as you will for the big money projects.
Now, I know that nationwide there's been a change in the last 4 or 2 years where I'll describe it this way. Districts, particularly in the House of Representatives, that used to be swing districts, meaning that they could go either way, have fallen in number. So essentially what's happened across the country is that if someone wins, they tend to win big, whether you're in the Democratic column or the Republican column. Now, there seems to be a parallel here in the state of Alaska, the sense being that we don't have swing districts, or very many of them. There may be a few where there's some doubt, but in many cases, witness this last election, you very often had an incumbent or one person running, or perhaps the real race was in the earlier race when you had people vying for position from one party. Any comments about that?
It's not good for the process, I think, is the most immediate and obvious answer. You know, we need difference of opinion. We need good conversation. We don't need a single ideology being pushed. And that seems to be the goal, seems to have been the goal of this most recent redistricting, as it has been in the past as well. You know, those in power, those in charge of making the appointments to the redistricting board tend to gravitate toward people who will favor their side. Is there a better way to do it? I don't know, but you know, it's surely not working for the good of all people.
Okay.
Well, I think the other area that could use some improvement, and it's obvious, is turnout. Redistricting or not, you know, we had an 18% turnout in the primaries and maybe 50% in the general election, and we don't know how the constituency of the MATSU feels about voter issues, about candidates, because half of them aren't voting. I mean, I think that the margins that we saw in the general were pretty clear. I don't think there would be, if we had 100% turnout, I don't think we would have different people elected to office. But it's consistently disappointing to see the level of, and it's not disenfranchisement, but sort of disinterest in voting that people, and very opinionated people in our borough seem to have.
Yes. Well, here's a topic that came up late in the year. I think it's safe to say that back in January, we were not talking about guns. As a result, I think, of the disaster, the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut, that topic late in the year has come to the fore. What are your thoughts about that as we look forward into 2013?
there are no easy answers, no simple solutions. You hear ideas floated all the time, and it's very, very easy to say, as we've heard, you know, oh, that won't change anything. Well, and no single thing will change anything for real, but doing nothing certainly will not change anything either. This is a time for good dialogue. This is a time for folks with ideas to come to the table and share them and find some common middle ground that recognizes that all rights come with limitations and responsibilities. And that's really what's at the crux of this conversation now.
Okay. Carrie or Zaz?
I think the issue at stake here is responsible gun ownership, and that process of getting a driver's license is, and this point has been made over and over again, so much more restrictive than the process of obtaining a weapon. An assault weapons ban keeps coming up, assault in air quotes. I don't know if this is the time for that, but this conversation isn't complete without moving toward education, gun safety education. I don't think that's going to come from the NRA, but it needs to come from somewhere.
It can come from folks who are gun owners and members of the NRA, though. There needs to be a distinction drawn between the NRA leadership and the NRA rank and file.
Excellent point.
Right. There was a good letter to the editor this morning, the ADN, about that, someone who suggested that the NRA split up into divisions and have the hunters and, people that wanted one gun for personal protection and those that wanted to own assault rifles. So there's been, as Mark said, there's no shortage of ideas. Like everything else, there's a lack of political will. And the timing of this is so problematic because we're in such a polarized state right now that we're having trouble having the conversation at all. And there's, as Mark referred to too, and Zaz, there needs to be lots of conversation about it, and it's a hard time to be talking about hard subjects, apparently.
And one other one that seems to be casting a shadow as far as our valley, and that is the fiscal discussion in Washington, or lack thereof. Since we've already pointed out that there seems to be difficulty for people with opinions on one side or the other to actually come to consensus or have a conversation, that continues on. As we finish up this year, we're not likely, it's possible that we will have some announcement coming in the remaining days of 2012. But in 2013, there appear at this point to be some changes that will happen. Most recently, I think from the Treasury Department, was pointed out that, well, we can keep going by moving money around from one account to another for a little while. But eventually, we have to get some more money. Any comments about that?
This is not a can that we can keep kicking down the road. It was kicked down the road to this point a few years ago with the assurance from elected people, don't worry, we'll take care of it. And here we are at the precipice, and it's still not taken care of. This really, I think, at its core is about, people standing up and demanding responsible representation from the people they elect.
Mm-hmm. Terry?
Yeah, well, I think they view Congress with a 10% approval rating. And if you can walk around doing your job knowing only 10% of the people really are enthused about the job you do, I'm not sure how you keep doing that job the same or why you keep doing it the same way. But we seem to care a lot. But again, it really does take some action from the populace. And, starting in the voters' booth is the best place to start, really.
Okay, Zaz, any comments?
I think there's just the general perception of a self-imposed deadline that is not going to be met is just crazy. Talk about a head scratcher. They knew it was coming. The Obama administration knew it was coming too, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of give. The fact that Boehner had a plan and his own party killed it, troubling.
Right.
Troubling for consensus.
Right. At least for him, if not for the country at large. Well, there's one local event that I thought we could briefly discuss. We're running out of time here. But as of Tuesday,
in the fair city of Palmer. You will no longer be able to step into your local drinking establishment and light up that cigar. Is that going to affect you three?
Does not affect me personally in terms of being a smoker, but I would say it would affect my choice as to where I go to have dinner or a drink.
Okay. Ladies?
It wouldn't have affected me either way because I don't really go out much anymore. But, you know, I have to say that this ordinance, Palmer is different from other communities in Alaska that have adopted a smoking ban in the number of businesses affected, which is really four bars downtown. And most of those places aren't restaurants you go with your family, say, to eat. They're, you know, bars you go to have a drink, maybe have a steak, and have a smoke inside where it's warm. And so the interesting thing here is that the number of businesses affected is small because every other business where you could have been smoking had voluntarily gone smoke-free. And the borough itself is not smoke-free. And so, you know, the argument has been made by these bars that you could just drive to Delroy's or to Four Corners and do what you've been doing at Palmer. So that'll be another interesting to see what happens next year with their business, the bottom line.
Of course, the process in this case was very interesting in that it was first brought to the city council. It was rejected very closely, mm-hmm. close vote. It then was petitioned and appeared on the ballot, and people voted. And they had a chance to vote one way or the other, and the result was the ordinance was voted in. So considerable discussion, a long process on a limited topic. In addition to those four bars, there are a couple of other places, Moose Club, for example, and
car wash,
and perhaps a few other offices, but that yeah. would be affected. Yeah. But a relatively small number. However, Palmer has, as a result of passing this ordinance, stood up tall within the state and within the borough, because there are many perhaps future actions that'll be modeled after what happened here to take a look at whether smoking prohibition should come into play for the borough or the state. Terry, any final comment?
Right. Well, I think it's a huge leap forward for Palmer. I think Zaz is absolutely right. Palmer has always set itself aside, kind of off to the side and be a little different. They have more, thoughtful land use codes. They've always been a family first community. It comes back from the colonist days. So I think it's going to be a huge feather in their cap to be the first community. I mean, there's 28 states that have gone non-smoking altogether. So, you know, it's just a matter. It's time. I think you're going to have a little bit of a shakeout with it. You'll get the normal amount. But I think by and large in communities, overall, they've all done better. So I look for it to only be better for Palmer to set itself aside as a nice little bedroom community void of all the strip malls and the traffic and now the smoke. And I think it can be bid very well for it in the future. But okay. I guess we'll have that conversation next December.
All right. Well, next year, 2013, is the 100th anniversary of the 16th Amendment and the institution of income tax. I just wanted to leave that as my contribution. Any last comments from the three of you? Terry.
Boy, I'm not going to follow that one. It'll be a good discussion. I think, it's good historically to look back on these things and see what made them come about. And just, it always makes me kind of wonder, we just repeat so much of what we do over and over again in the same thing. So it'll be interesting to look back on this conversation and see where we are next year at this time.
Okay.
I guess my only wish for the new year would be that our elected officials are governing for the people and not for the politics of the situation.
That's something everyone can get behind, I think. I hope.
Okay. Well, thank you once again, Zaz Hollander, Terry Snyder, Mark Kelsey, for coming in for Valley Edition. And we'll be talking with you in 2013. Hard to believe.